the greenhouse. Come on, ducks, quick, tweet, hurry. And hello again, I'm Frieda Morrison, and welcome to Grow Radio. And as is our wont, I'm starting the programme out in my ain garden, or should I say, in the greenhouse out in the garden, because outside, the rain is not taking time to come down. It's yon wheat and stuff that gings right into your beans. Mochy, some would say. Aye, the weather nae my beans like. So I'm keeping dry and the warm in the greenhouse again. Fit a weather. But nae complaining, we've got some good things happening this season. Great crop of tomatoes. Just wander up down here and here, look at them. Aye, some still to ripen, but I would imagine there's going to be a lot of green tomatoes. And mind you, dinner, I had to make chutney with green tomatoes, and our chef, Claire Patterson, will be telling you more about that later in the programme. And then there's the seed heeds, the collection. The red out has started, but nae afore I collect the seeds. Seeds for the tam thooms up here, bonny, they're still looking bonny. And the tagetes and the marigolds are to be collected. And up at the end of the house, up this way, we've still got, you know, to our rasps. Believe it or not, rasps. This time of the year. And of course, outside, as I was walking in, I was noticing that the bushes are just hanging with brambles. And folk are already starting, or maybe even finishing, making a bramble jam already. And I've got some as a present to the bee cabin down the road. More about the bee cabin later. And the fantastic relishes and jams that Fee makes. Apple, jelly and honey, just to mention but one. And of course, it's time to get some of the rose hips made into syrup. I've got a fantastic recipe for Jean Urquhart up in Shetland. And thank you for that, Jean. But nae hanging about. Quick, turn round the greenhouse. And can't put off much time in here because the team are waiting in their virtual sheds. So without further ado, come with me out to the greenhouse to join the gang and welcome to Grow Radio. Where's the doggies? Come on, doggies, come on, quick, sweet. Hurry, run. Run, 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 run. And welcome again to our virtual sheds. The team is, as usual, rooted and ready to tuck you round the garden. In this episode, we're just about dean with the garden hearst. We've laboured, hearsted, and in most cases enjoyed the results in the kitchen. Well, some of us. But for them that hisna, there's aye next year. And as I've said afore, that's where we come in. We can help you. We can encourage you. And you can't help but notice we have a liking for food in this programme. But this programme is for them that has started, them that's experienced, and even them that didn't even hear garden, just to enjoy the company. And let me introduce the company. Our soon sorter, guiding us through the waves in his studio in Embra, Richie Werner, come in.
Aye, aye, how we doing?
Aye, Richie, we're doing fine.
Brah.
And in his virtual shed in Aberdeen, our programme manager looking after our technical bits for the programme, welcome Andrew Davidson.
Aye, aye, fit like a date.
Oh, fine, fine, fine. And our head gardener, a past curator of the Botanical Gardens in Edinburgh and chair of the Open Garden Scheme in Edinburgh, come in, David Mitchell.
Hello there, Frieda. How are you doing?
We're all gathering fine. That's fine. In this programme, as well as answering your garden questions, we introduce you to our guest cook. Welcome back, Claire Patterson, from Conor Glen House in Strontian. Claire, hello.
Morning, Frieda.
Morning. Well, you ken us. It's a mochy morning again, but we're fine and warm in our sheds. Claire, you're busy at this time of year. You regularly cook for about 15 to 20 guests per sitting, is that right?
But we do. Obviously, not so much this year. We're, like everyone else, it's a bit quieter than usual, but still plenty to do.
But you've got the added advantage of having a kitchen garden and a gardener that can provide some of the produce, eh?
We do. We've got a lovely gardener and a great polytunnel and a great herb garden and fruit trees and plenty to keep us busy.
Aye. Now, you'll be guiding us through the dishes and you're preparing some of the dishes at this time of the year and keeping with the produce for the garden. Give us the names of the dishes you'll be speaking about later, Claire.
Today we've got a roasted squash or pumpkin with feta cheese, pumpkin seeds and mint. I've been making some crab apple jelly, and I like to spike that with a bit of chilli. I've got a new ingredient recently, some lovely sweet potato leaves. So I've got those in a miso soup with some noodles and vegetables. Uh-huh. And then finishing off with a steamed apple sponge with toffee sauce.
Oh, steamed apple sponge, toffee sauce. Do you hear that, Ains? Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Right. No, we'll hear.
I'm just going to Nirvana with a lashin.
Enough of this. Because we have a special guest, and we thought it was about time to hear about Fitzgannon and some of your gardens. So for our very first guest, Gairdner, let us welcome Fionnuala Ive, the one and only, the travel writer, the musician, the broadcaster and bon viveur, Hugh Taylor. Welcome to Grow Radio.
Thanks, Frida. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. What's the weather doing in your part of the world?
There's a very high degree of relative humidity. Other folk might say it's just raining.
Okay.
You mean it's a dreich gallow a day?
Aye, well, it's certainly dreich.
I'm used to that, coming for that air, I know. My goodness.
Aye, you were just out the road a bit for me.
Aye, no wonder gallow is green. It's all to do with the rain. I mean, you're saying to a Galloway farmer, what do you think of the weather? He says, it's making me money, the grass is growing.
Hugh, briefly, we'll get into bits in more detail about your garden in a few minutes, but are you an experienced gardener or a starter?
Well, I'm merely a starter. I was brought up in the family Ayrshire tatty farm down near Girvan, so I ken about tatties, but a lot of the other stuff I've been growing, I don't do too much about, so I started briefly last year, expanded my kind of allotment this year, and I've had some mixed results. Some things worked great, some things didn't, and other things came up that I thought, I can't mind planting that.
like as I suppose. Right, we'll come back to you, find out more about your garden and if it's been happening later on. Right, also in this programme, David Mitchell of that parish will enlighten us is again about colour foliage and winter bonny things in the garden. This is part two of that topic. But let's get to the questions. First question is for Helen Fitch up in Lambride near Fochabers. Now, Helen, as you'll mind, is in our guest cooks as well. Helen has two questions. This is the first one. It's an email. Fitch, the best way to grow tomatillos. We have them in the polytunnel, but they're half a slow to ripen. There's an awful lot of them, but some are half a wee and they're near ripening much. So I've only had a picking. Dave, what's happening?
Well, I mean, tomatillos are queer wee things. You can, their Latin name is Phasalis philadelphica, and they're in the same family as tatties and tomatoes. And, you know, they actually pick them when they're green, Frida.
All right.
And wee scooty things they are, but my gosh, they didn't half pack some punch for their size. They've got a nippy flavour and you can use them for making salsa or bit them in soups. They're good with chicken and pork and all, but they love the sun. And a lot of folk were kind of mixed up when they first started growing them because the fruit's actually inside a wee papery husk. And the best indication of when they're ripe is when that husk busts open its cell. And then the fruit will be inside it, but often the fruit actually is green. And the strongest flavour ones, you can pick them when they're green, and that's when the flavour's at its strongest. You can leave them to, some of them gone yellow age, some of them actually go a dark, kind of even purple colour. They're best picked early in the morning when there's more moisture in the fruit, and they taste better. If they get the sun at them, if you're picking them in the heat of the day, they're not quite as good. Mm-hmm. And they take a long time to ripen, and especially here in Scotland. You know, it can be well into October, November before the wee papery pockets actually burst open. And two or three plants are usually enough for folk. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not wanting over many of them. If you do get a glut of fruit, you can freeze them. You always need a minimum of two plants for pollination. They like a sheltered spot out of the wind or in a polytunnel. They're nae that fussy about the soil. They'll take a wee bit of feed. But yeah, another thing is they're a bit like tomatoes. They dinna like to be drookit. No. If you overwater them, they'll no recover for it as easily.
Claire, have you had any experience with tomatillos?
I love tomatillos, Frida. I've, n- I didn't even know you could grow them in Scotland. So I'll be having a wee chat with the gardener about that, I think. Because she's very good at tomatoes. So I think some tomatillos might be just the thing. But I love them. I char them and then sort of peel them and then make them into salsas and things like that. Really good in Mexican food, really good sort of base and a really distinctive flavour.
If you char them, Claire, do you think that they taste a wee bit sweeter?
I think so. They're very sharp, but it just mellows them a wee bit and then it gives you that wee bit of smokiness as well, which is lovely, along with all those other kind of coriander and lime and all those kind of Mexican tastes.
Listen to us, you'd think we were biding in the tropics with all these fancy things we're growing nowadays that we never used to grow years ago.
Okay, this is took you back to him again. This is Lorna Williamson from Glasgow. Email, fits the best way to grow garlic and find if I plant it.
Well, again, that's queer. When I started out 40 plus years ago, nae many folk grew garlic here in Scotland. And, you know, we certainly, as our cuisine's changed, and we've learnt a lot more about its health benefits, more and more people are growing it. And it does do quite well in Scotland, even in the far north. But there's kind of 4 or 5 golden rules with garlic. It needs a long growing season. So you need to plant it in the autumn, October, November, in milder parts of the country. But if you bide where it's cold and the ground's wet and damp, you're better waiting to the early spring. Now, garlic, needs a cold spell to get it gone. And if you're going to plant it in the spring, some folk even put the bulbs that they're going to plant in the fridge for a couple of weeks just to give them a wee chill before they plant it. It likes a free-draining soil, and it'll no say no to a wee pickle of lime. You should get it into as good a sunny site as you can, and you should buy good quality bulbs, nae cheating and planting some that you've bought in the supermarket. They're no just as, they might not be as reliable or as suitable for conditions in the UK. And some folk even start it in pots and keep it in a cold frame or an unheated greenhouse over the winter. Mm-hmm. And other folk will put it in the polytunnel, but you've got to watch over winter on the outside in the polytunnel because the mice have changed their diet and all, and they'll hear a good naughty if they can get it.
Man. Okay, can I bring in Hugh here? Hugh, you grow garlic as well, didn't you?
I do, Frieda. I started last year. I got a winter set for the Isle of Wight garlic farm, and I planted it. Unfortunately, it came at the end of September, just when I was away for my month in Italy. So it was November before I put it in, but I had a really great crop. But obviously, when I started looking at it, when I got it planted up, I realised that it wasn't enough. So I've bought about 3 times that amount, and I'm just about to plant it later this week.
That place in the Isle of Wight's an off-a-gauge supplier, Hugh. You get lovely great, quality bulbs for them.
And I bought a string of garlic for eating off them as well, because we didn't have enough to come in, and it's awfully bonny looking. I've got it hung up in the pantry.
Lovely. Hugh, when we're here on your wife, how big is your garden?
Well, it's actually quite a big garden. We're staying in what used to be the bakery in Money Ive. David, you'll maybe mind it way back. At the back of it was the baker's shed, which a few years ago we converted into a cottage for my in-laws, and then when they went away, it became a kind of holiday cottage. But recently we decamped into it to paint the kitchen, and we liked being out there that much that we've just downsized into it. So there's a big garden, big walled garden behind that, and that has got a couple of decks in it that I put up. And my wife does mostly the flowers and stuff in there, and a bit of fruit. She does the raspberries and the strawberries, and then, of course, in the greenhouse, she's got the tomatoes. But if you go through that wall, we've actually got what was the back garden of my neighbour's house 2 doors up, because the baker bought a lot of grun way back about the early 50s so that he could get his trucks in. But this particular piece of grun was, as an old guy, kept a kind of scrapyard on it, so it's useless. And I've got about 7 or 8 raised, and is it 9 raised beds? But I put a lot of raised beds on it, so that's what I'm working with.
Okay, fits in your raised beds.
Well, I've got pak choi and chard and courgettes and something that I thought was a butternut squash, but it grew, it came out like a marrow, so I do. It must have been a rang seed in the packet. Then I've got kale, and I've got Savoy cabbage, I've got neeps, I've got Brussels sprouts, I've got purple sprout and broccoli, I've got perpetual spinach, I had spring onions in, and what else did I grow? I tried to grow a lot of peas, but the beasties out. We've got this lovely hedge that I don't cut till the back end, and it's full of beasties, and I put the peas in the bed near the hedge, and the beasties had a great feast. But it's, it's been, and then, I tried fennel as well, and I had sort of moderate success with that. And then in, we've got a big long conservatory, joins the two houses together. So I was growing, Moira's been growing peppers and chilies and cucumbers in there, and had a go at aubergines, but get nowhere at all with them. And I was having another go at butternut squash, which I've never managed to get to grow, but I got one whole big butternut squash. So I'm going to go for two next year.
Okay, I can just hear Claire Patterson thinking, I wish I was doing there. I could do something with that garden.
Well, she's welcome to come any time. I mean, I'm always open to folk coming to feed me.
Okay, you've got jokes and hens and twa half a bonny granddaughter as well helping you, of course. So, fit have you already hairsted, Hugh?
Well, obviously the pak choi didn't last too long, but I left one in to seed so that I can get the seeds for next year. The chard is still kind of going yet, and the perpetual spinach, which is a variety of chard, I believe, is still going. We harvested about 5 punna broad beans, and I've got most of them in the freezer. The fennel, well, that all went into stuffed peppers because we didn't have a lot of it. Obviously, the garlic's up and we're using it. Oh, I had ingens in and all, but the hens got out a few times and scarted them up. But despite that, I still get two or three good string of ingens. The winter purple sprout and broccoli stuff, it comes at the spring, that was going good. Did quite well out of that. I've got the stuff that flowered in the summer, but it's no too great, so I'm not going to bother with it again.
Right, can I just stop you there? Because again, you've got a question about your apple tree. You only got a apple this year, and it was covered with blossom. David, what was going on with Hugh's apple tree?
Well, apples are queer things, you know. The process of pollination can... It's a wonderful thing, but it can be impacted on by weather conditions not being right. Can mean that you get a very poor germination, because the actual pollen grain itself has to germinate to grow down into the ovary and fertilise the egg in the ovary so that you get the fruit. Now, so if the weather conditions are just not right when that's happening, it can impact on the crop. If you've got a lack of a suitable cross-pollinator, that can happen. And even in varieties that folks say are truly self-fertile, you get, there's no such a thing. But the biggest challenge, and I hope this has no happened with you, is you get into a thing called biennial bearing, where you get a heavy crop one year, and then you get no fruit at all, or little or no fruit the second year. And then in the third year, you'll get a big crop again. And there are some varieties like Blenheim Orange and Bramley Seedling, Laxton Superb, that are very prone to that. And it can be brought on by a hard frost killing the blossom in one year, so the cycle gets started that way. Or it can be caused by, just the feeding and the watering not being right. You know, how do you fix it if it's there? If you start to get that, well, you can reduce the number of fruit buds that there are in a heavy fruiting year by as much as 60%. Or you can wait till the flowers open and actually cut the flowers off in that year and try and get the plant back into a balance. You can thin the fruit after setting, but really, fruit trees, you need to look after them. So often we put them in the ground and we go away and we just forget them. You know, you shouldn't let the grass grow right up to the bottom of them. You should have a nice circle round about them in an orchard situation where you can give them a good mulch or compost, give them a wee water in the spring, whatever. But I suspect this year If you had a lot of blossom, Hugh, and you've no got a lot of fruit, I suspect it's more likely to have been the weather.
I think it was a frost about that time.
Well, you see, that frost would impact heavily on the ability of the pollen grains that had been transferred by insects to germinate, and you would just get a poor crop. I hope that you get a good flowering next year and you get a good set. Otherwise, there is a danger that you can get into that biennial bearing pattern. And if you do, the answer's to either to thin the flowers or thin the buds.
Okay, can I stop you there? Because we're going to come back to Hugh. But Hugh, feel free to join in, as I said, with the other confabs. And I would like folk to hear about what you're planning for your community radio later on, Alive 107.3, the community radio for Dumfries and District and worldwide. Now, Fit, we are proud to say, plays this very programme, Grow Radio and Scotch Radio. So we'll hear more about that in a minute. Thank you, Hugh, for that. Your guidance sounds amazing. Now, you're listening to Grow Radio. This is Frieda Morrison, and with me is Dave Mitchell, Richie Werner, Andrew Davidson, Claire Patterson, and our special guest gardener, Hugh Taylor from Mony Ive. Andrew, give your instructions for folk to get in contact, please.
Well, if you want to take part in the programme and send your questions in, there's a few ways you can do it. You can send us an email, and that's on info@growradio.com, or because we like to hear your voice, I'd recommend that you go on to growradio.com, hit the button, record your question, and it gets sent right over to us. I'll talk less than a minute. As I always say, nice scuttering about. And in the next programme, we'll get an answer to your question for you.
You see that nice scuttering about? I love that. It could become a mission statement. Nice scuttering about. Right. And can I take this opportunity to congratulate you, Andrew, shortlisted for an award of Scots Speaker of the Year in the forthcoming Scots Language Awards.
Aye, there you go.
Richie nominated, Andrew. Aye. So we're very proud of you, Andrew.
Yourself.
Organised by Hands Up for Trad. And if you want to register your vote, going into the website. It's www.scotslanguageawards.com. Is that the right website, Andrew? Have you got another link?
Aye, that seems right to me, aye.
So all you out there, nae scuttering about, vote.
Aye, there you go.
I mean, you wanted to say that, nae scuttering about.
He's stealing your line. Just before we get off the start, can I mention that Grow Radio is also nominated for an award, Scots Project of the Year, in this year's lineup. Mind Scotch Radio won the project year last year for the Doric Film Festival. So we won that. So I was honoured to be the Scots Speaker of the Year. So it's time for somebody else's shotty this year. So on behalf of the entire team, we are delighted to be involved. And a big thank you to Abdi that has supported us. And it's been quite a journey on this garden path. And a big thank you to Simon Toomier and his team at Hands Up for Trad for their organising the event. A lot of work goes into that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, aye.
And as I said, Grow Radio has been nominated in the Scots Project of the Year category.
Oh, that's great, eh?
Now, a while back in March, at the start of the first COVID lockdown, we started this programme. It seems a long, long time ago. We started this programme as a direct response to folk asking if we could give them some idea about gardens, and Grow Radio emerged as a response to meet that need. So as time went on, we realised that gardens were playing a bigger and bigger part of folks' lives. And I'll let Dave say a few words here. Dave.
Well, he kind of saw a truth, Frieda. You and I had a natter on the phone, and we just thought, what can we do to help folk and make our gardening community seem involved? I often think gardening's the glue that binds us all together. It's, you know, we're all into growing things and sharing what we grow and sharing that and celebrating our gardens through food. But this summer, our gardens became that room outside.
Aye.
For everybody. They became a place for solace, a place for inspiration, a place for ideas, a place of frustration when things didn't go right and we wanted to learn more. But no, I must admit, I'm awful proud of what, you know, we've all managed today and putting this together and making it work. It's been a grand experience.
Aye. And we decided to do a series of six at the time, but the response has been so good, we unanimously agreed to extend the run. We might be here for years. It's happened afore, mind Dave.
it would be good if we were here for years, because I've even had questions from the far side of the world about hummingbirds. I mean, I ask you.
Hummingbirds, that's right. And you kent about hummingbirds.
I did. I kent about hummingbirds.
Can we get back to the here and new Ewens? I've got another another email question for Jane Clark in Aberdeen. Is this a good time to tuck cuttings?
No. That's it. It's too early for hardwood cuttings. Softwood cuttings in the spring and early summer. Semi-right cuttings late summer. Hardwood cuttings in the winter. You need to wait till the leaves are done and Jack's been dancing about and then you'll get some hardwoods done.
Okay. Quite simple. Nah. Okay, nah. Back to Helen Fitch and another question. It's an email again. There's an awful lot of aphids on the leaves over kale. Fitch, the best way to get rid of them, or are they edible? I think this is maybe coming cheap there. Are they edible, she says?
No, you're not supposed to eat them. You wash them off down the sink, but you shouldn't even get these wee scunners at that stage. They're a real nuisance. You can't even, they've got a Sunday name, so Brevi Corne Brassicae. I ask you, the only good thing for mealybug cabbage aphid is squishing it between your finger and your thumb. They're difficult to control. Encourage ladybirds, beetles, and at the end of the season, make sure any plants that have been infected are disposed of well, far away from your cabbage patch. Exercise good crop rotation. You can, if you want, use organic sprays that have got pyrethrums in them or fatty acids or plant invigorators, but I'm not a big fan of spraying.
Righto. Now, it just dawned on me that we haven't heard for Richie as well, if it's been happening in his garden this episode. Have you been in your garden at all this last month?
Well, I have. I went and got... The crab apples were starting to drop because I've got a wee swing for the wee one of the wee ones, both of the wee ones, under the crab apple tree. And every time I was swinging my three-year-old, there's the apples were falling on her head. So I thought, all right, time's the time, we'll get the ladder out. And I sort of took turns going up the ladder, and she went up, picked some, and my four-year-old went up and picked some. And we got quite a lot of them, which was really good. So I managed to make jelly with my granny, which was great, so we're able to do all that, and she's just a genius with stuff like that. So we got something done, but what sort of pricked my ear up sort of earlier was this suspicion of chili that I could have put in. So I can't wait to hear about that, Claire.
Well, Claire has got a great recipe for crab apple jelly, and indeed she puts in some red chilies, eh, Claire?
I do. I love a wee bit of chili, so anything that can have a wee bit of chili added tends to get it. Give it a go.
I'll very briefly mention an episode on Scotch Radio. Can I do that one again, Richie? And just to remind folk that we had a Christmas competition.
Oh,
you,
no.
Me and Steve Byrne. And the competition was the best maker of apple jelly. So we all had our apple jelly jars in the studio. And we each made our apple jelly. And Steve Byrne won. But there was a judge's inquest. Wasn't there? Was a judge's
inquest. Do you know what? It was actually, I hate to say it and I hate to correct you, but it was my jelly.
Was your jelly the one?
And Steve was the judge. Steve was the taster. And came what happened.
No.
He tasted the jelly with a nice taste and said, oh, aye, Frida's jelly's nice. Oh, aye, Richie's jelly's nice. And then see, at the end of it, he'd pronounced the winner and I just eked out in front of you. And you came what it was? He turned over the spoon. And you came what was in the back of the spoon?
No.
A great big doddy foost.
He was disqualified.
So Steve's good name stands in good stead. But he's yet to make Jilly, so it's his turn next.
It's his turn next. I will hear him on the programme. Farger Jilly, we'll say. Farger Jilly. He's eye on about his Oslins. Right.
That's it.
Speaking about edible, Claire, our cook in Strontain, is planning a few special dishes for us in keeping with the season of the garden. Fitch, your first to our suggestions. Over to you, Claire.
Well, today, Frida, I've got some roasted squash or pumpkin, whatever you've got growing, and I basically cut that into wedges, a wee bit of oil, salt and pepper, and then a really hot oven for a good 30 minutes, 40 minutes, until it's nice and tender, a wee bit kind of charred and browned at the edges. And then just put that in a lovely dish and then sprinkle over a wee bit of feta cheese, some toasted pumpkin seeds and a wee bit of torn mint. If you're a chilli fiend like I am, I sprinkle a wee bit of the mild chili flakes, Aleppo chili flakes over the top as well, because I don't think much goes wrong with a wee bit of chili.
So the crab apple gili has got the red chilies and the whole thing. Have you got Burns in the background?
The dog, yeah, they were sent to the park, but I think they're back.
Travel.
Bit of atmosphere. It wasn't me.
I've just heard a door slam, so I think my husband's corralled them.
We cope with these things. I've got two sleeping dogs here as well, and on a minute new the cat will come in to join in the chorus. Anyway, I had quite a good crop of apples this year that I gave to my pals Fee and Colin at the bee cabin down the road in the village of Dess and Deeside. And in return, folks, I got jars of apple and honey gili.
Whoa.
Oh. With cheese, this is a delicacy, especially goat's cheese and oatcakes. Now, just to remind you, it's good to get the best use for the produce for your garden. So if you can't use it, give it to somebody else that can. Don't waste it. And Fee at the bee cabin is an exceptionally good cook, just like Claire. And I also got apple crumbles. Apple crumbles. Oh, boy, they were good. Now, I'll give you the contacts for the bee cabin near the end of this programme. Now, as I said before, our guest gardener is a travel writer, musician, broadcaster, and a manny that cares about good food and good taste. You're making wine as well, aren't you, for your garden, Hugh?
Aye, we've got two blackcurrant bushes, and an elderly neighbour used to always take the fruit and make jam, and we get a few jars back because we don't eat a lot of blackcurrant jam, but she's by doing stuff like that now. So I decided it was a great crop this year, and I decided that these were actually red wine bushes. So I've made 5 gallon of blackcurrant wine, which is festering away nicely. And then I got another, I think a kilo gooseberries off of the solitary gooseberry bush, and they're in the freezer, and I'll make wine off of them. And I forgot to say, one of the other things I harvested was beetroot, and I've got them all pickled in a big Kilner jar. So I'm fair pleased with my results.
Aye, a big larder. We're all coming to you for Christmas, I can tell you. I like the sound of that.
And enough tatties to see us through the winter as well. I grew them in car tyres that I got for the garage for nothing. And when I got them all up, I've sorted them into bacon tatties and other tatties. And I've never liked paper bags or plastic or anything like that. So I ordered up some nice Hessian bags. Oh. And I've got them in Hessian bags and inside cardboard boxes and in my pantry.
Yes, man, Ken's for his day. Now, as I said, you play this programme, Grow Radio, as part of your running order for your community radio based in Dumfries, Alive 107.3. Now, you've been broadcasting right through lockdown, nae stopping you. There's an exciting development going on with Alive 107.3. Tell us, Mayor Hugh.
Since we changed the company and took the radio station into a kind of different ownership about a year ago, we've been doing a lot of fundraising to get new kit because our studios were like almost worn out. Nobody'd been looking at replacing anything. But a few weeks ago, we sprung a leak in the roof where we are, top of a furniture store, right over the Studio One. And so we decided, right, there's no chance of getting that roof repaired. So one of our guys come up. We discovered that there was these workshops in Dumfries that were kind of really not getting used. And so we approached the charity that was in using part of them, then the council, and we are now in the throes of going in through the asset transfer stuff to actually acquire these buildings for new studios. And I'm hoping to sign a lease later this week, which will let us in immediately, and then we can start building it. So we're going to have like two studios, a live room, which will ultimately become a full recording studio, a room, a server room, and the office space, plus of some of the workshops that are left in conjunction with this other furniture restore project, Restore Dumfries. There's going to be a set up a North West Men's Shed. Now, the area it's in is an area of extreme urban deprivation. And so, you know, what we're going to do is get involved more with the community there. We've still been working with them for a while.
But you've got the Radio Academy as well for the schools.
Aye, well, that was something, a wee idea I had that I was going to start looking at the back end of this year. But then a friend of mine who manages the YM had got to a stage where they were setting up a wee radio station, and they were going to start teaching kids for the local academy in terms of getting them up for radio broadcasting. Right. But the guy who was driving all this just basically resigned and left just like that 2 days before the kids were due to come in. But I had for a period, for one of the many things I've done in my many lives in the past, I was a college lecturer in radio, TV and video production. So we took this over. We created the Live Radio Academy. We've had some really incredible young people in, and it's going really well. And we're going to expand that, get a wee studio going up at the YM and do a night school so that the kids can actually broadcast live, but in a closed circuit within the YM building. They're in the old school at Lochside now. And this building that we're going after is just 5 minutes walk round the corner. So it means we can transition the young folk from there round to start doing, you know, proper grown-up radio training when the ones that are interested can go on.
And you can ask, it's near beyond the realms of imagination, what kind of programmes you could be doing. You could be doing Mayor Gardening programmes, but programmes that reach out and identify and connect with the community. Congratulations, you. What you're doing is fantastic. And the worth of radio is being felt these last few months. You can't beat it, even with Netflix. We even beat Netflix, I think.
What's Netflix? Netflix? Anyway, as I say, you're limited only by the extent of your imagination and the amount of money you can beg off folk.
Okay, now we're nearly at the end of this episode. And Andrew, are you still there? You're there then.
I'm still here.
Can you give us a roundup of what's going on and who folk can get in touch as well?
I will still be delivered with a bit more gravitas now. I'm a Scots Speaker of the Year nominee. Okay. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email your question at info@growradio.com. Or if you're wanting a feature with your voice in a programme, you can go on to growradio.com, and then on a website, just at the front page, there's a button. You can push that button, just speak a word, ask your question, get sent directly to us, and we'll get you sorted out.
Sorted
nice
out.
Nice scuttering.
Nice scuttering about. Okay. Links for the votes for Speaker of the Year, the Hands Up for Trad Scots Radio Awards. Have you got them to hand as well, Andrew?
You can go to scotslanguageawards.com. There's a form on air, and you can hear a look at some of the other folk that were nominated as well.
Aye.
I think there's about 10 categories, is there?
Aye,
so you can hear a look, and there's some amazing projects this year, so
aye,
hear a look at Abdi, vote, give us a vote if you want to vote for me as well. There you go.
There you go.
Shameless plug.
Honestly, best wishes to Abdi, because it's a great setup that Simon Dumier and the team has created. It's a good one. Right, Dave, we did Colour in the Garden part one last episode. Are you ready for part two? Over to you.
Aye, well, as you can, we spoke about the value of foliage plants in the garden, feeder for texture and colour and form and kind of mix and contrast. But I want to share some of my favourites with you today, kind of linking that day to, you know, looking ahead into the winter and cutting things and bringing into the house. Abies coriana, dawn's a lovely conifer, especially when it's young, beautiful blue-green growth and lovely cones. Juniperus, squamata, blue star, lovely blue foliage, great for putting in wreaths. And then the golden yew, Taxus bacta aurea marginata. Eucalyptus I love, you know, and I like to pollard them when they're in the garden, so they don't let them get too big, and then you get the young growth on them, things like Eucalyptus gunny eye. Or if you want to let it mature and you're on the west coast, you can't beat Eucalyptus coxifera. It's such a bonny thing. Ilex golden king. And exotics, you can, things like Desfontania spinosa, with its holly-like leaves and bright orange and reed flowers. And, you know, Trachycarpus fortunae, the fortune's palm. That's a tough as all boots these days. And, you know, it does well. I even grow it outside here in Edinburgh. You can't really go past Pyrus formosa forest flame. Mm-hmm. You see it everywhere with that lovely red growth and evergreen. foliage and the pittosporums from New Zealand. You know, I've some of them growing in my garden here, and they're great for cutting and putting in winter decorations in the house. Yeah, but basic stay, things like Pachysandra terminalis, it's a lovely evergreen foliage, covers the ground. I hate it planted behind my garden shed. I never really see it. It just keeps the weeds down. But when I want it, I go and cut a bit, and it makes a really nice thing in a table arrangement. And then I forget about ferns, things like Dicksonia antarctica. You know, believe it or not, I grow that in Edinburgh now. And 25 years ago, I don't think I would have done it. It's come through 7 or 8 winters with me now. Looking further ahead into the winter, you get, there's an awful good, a long poem that was written by Vita Sackville-West called The Garden. And there's just a couple of lines in it that I think are so inspiring. Gairdner, if you listen, listen weel. Plant for your winter pleasure when the months dishearten. Plant to thin the fragile note touched from the brittle violin of frost. And you know, there's a whole list of things that just look wonderful for now to me. Just take the ornamental kale. You know, beautiful Betula Jackmontii with its beautiful white bark. Winter sweet, golden yellow flowers. You can smell it for about 15 feet away. It's a wonderful fragrance.
Dave, can I just stop you in there? Is there any chance so we can get some photographs of your garden? I think you've been saying that you would like to put up a few.
Well,
that would be good, just to hear a look at what you've got there.
I can send you some pictures of the garden. You can put them up on the website. Pictures of the autumn colour and that.
That would be great. And I'm going to go back to the questions. And we've got an audio question, a recorded question. This is for Ellie Logan on the Isle of Gea.
Hi, Grow Radio. It's Ellie Logan here in the Isle of Gea off the west coast of Scotland. I've got a lovely garden I'm establishing on the island here. This is my second growing season. And I have an amazing microclimate in my back garden where I'm growing my fruit and veg. And this year, it's my second year, as I said, of growing. So second year of red currants in the garden that I put in last year. And this year, I got not one bean of fruit off the red currants, not one fruit at all. But I had a mighty attack of currant blister aphid. And I'd like to know what to do to prevent it next year and prevent it spreading to my other currant bushes that I'm establishing in the garden. I love red currants, so please help me. I don't want to give up on these plants. They're about waist height, so they're reasonably big plants, but they didn't really put on any growth either this year. They were just in survival mode. So if you could help, that would be awesome.
Right, Dave, here you go. And just a reminder that before we go any further, that Ellie runs a fantastic B&B on the island of Gea called Achamore Lodge. Highly recommended. Right, can you help Ellie in her reed currants, Dave?
Well, currant blister aphid, it's a bit of a scunner. It doesn't usually affect the plant's vigour that much and its ability to bear fruit. But if she's got it and it's been really bad, what you see is red blisters on the leaves. There's no point in applying any sort of spray to treat it after it appears. That's too late. Really, you have to be very vigilant early in the year and look out for any signs of the aphid removing any growth. Make sure you tidy up in the back end of this year when all the leaves come down. Good hygiene round the bush is absolutely vital, and you might want to try something like Vitax tree wash on the bushes over the winter. So good hygiene, be very vigilant in the early part of the year when the leaves emerge. If you see any sign of the aphid at all, either squish them with your finger or cut the leaf off. And, you know, it'll no do any harm to give the plants a really good mulch and a wee bit of extra fertiliser, February, March, you know, just as your things are starting to come back into growth, especially where she is there in Gea, because the season will be earlier.
Thanks, Dave, and thank you to Ellie for sending that in, much appreciated, and hopefully I'll get across the gear in these days. Now, back to Claire for another two recipes before we close the sheddy door. Claire, on yourself.
On myself. So I went down to one of our local growers last week, and as part of the things she gave me was something I've never cooked with before, and that was sweet potato leaves. And these are just as you would imagine, a green leaf. They've got a lovely, really kind of delicate flavour, bit sort of chardy. I've cooked those in a miso soup with a wee bit of some noodles and some other vegetables, and just basically wilt the leaves down with any other veggies, put this in your bowl with some cooked noodles, and then you just cover that with a soup made from miso paste, which is that really rich umami Japanese paste that's sort of very rich and hearty but also very light. Pour that soup over your bowl of noodles and lovely veggies, and you can pop a wee soft boiled egg on the top as well just to finish it off.
Oh, lovely.
And alongside that, I, as well as loving chili, I also love a pickle. A wee quick sort of Japanese style pickle with some sliced carrots, sliced radishes if you've got any, some matchsticks of neep, and then mix them in with some rice wine vinegar, some salt and sugar, and just leave that for an hour or so. And that is a really nice pickle. It needs to be the rice wine vinegar because it's very subtle. It's not, it's a bit more gentle than our vinegars.
Okay. Claire, thank you. Thank you so much for that. We've got steamed apple sponge with toffee sauce.
We do. Something sweet to finish. So your basic sponge mixture, Frida, with your butter, your sugar, your egg, your self-raisin flour, and then just put some peeled and diced apples, whatever apples you've got, mix those through, and then into a buttered pudding basin. Top it with greaseproof paper and a bit of foil, and then steam it for 2 hours until it's cooked through. And I put a bit of toffee sauce on that, which is lovely. So butter, dark muscovado sugar, and double cream. And a wee bit of nuts on top wouldn't go amiss.
You notice there's just silence for everybody else. They're all sitting there thinking, oh, if only we could get some of that.
I've eaten it already.
Just a wee bit. A wee bit.
I'm just slavering.
I've eaten it already. It's all gone. It's finished.
That noodle dish sounds amazing. Can you use beetroot leaves as well?
Absolutely. I think it's one of these things that's quite often you're growing it for one thing, aren't you? But you get a wee bonus on the side. But I do love beetroot leaves.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
I use them a lot.
I was going to eat them this year, but the beastie had eaten them, so I didn't.
Is this in your mum's garden? Have you eaten all your beetroot leaves?
Oh, I say the leaves. We had the beetroot till we roasted it up just a couple of weeks ago. It was amazing. So good.
Aye. Remember Hugh mentioned that. Did you roast the beetroot as well, or did you just pickle them, Hugh?
No, I roasted it first and then I pickled them.
Oh, I see. Right. That sounds great. Well, as I mentioned earlier, that my extra apples went to my pals, Fee and Colin, in the bee cabin down the road at Des and Deeside, and I promised to tell folk where that was. So the bee cabin contact details are phone 0780 922 9375, or the email is best in bcabin@gmail.com. bcabin@gmail.com. Full of great ideas for Christmas presents as well. I'll just mention some: Scottish raspberry jam, wild bramble jam, red currant and red gooseberry jam, apple and honey jelly I mentioned earlier, beetroot chutney, red currant vinegar dressing, bramble and honey vinegar dressing, to mention but a few. Are you drooling as well? It's just a fantastic place. I love it to bits. And Claire, thank you for the recipes. As I said, you're very welcome, because you just make us feel very, very hungry, and your recipes sound fantastic.
No bother.
Okay. No, speaking about presents, I got something special through the post the other day. I received a very lovely letter from musician Sandy Ingram from Glams. Sandy, as many will ken, is a great musician, composer and fiddle player, and a parcel arrived with three of Sandy's CDs. I'll read a bit of the letter. Dear Frida, enclosed are three of my CDs. A gentleman called Willie Duncan from Upper Largo in Leven, who recently purchased my CDs, has written to me today and asked me to send a copy of each of the three CDs to you. He enclosed money for the purchase of them together with the postage. So in accordance with his wishes, I send them to you. And I'm sure he would be absolutely delighted to hear that you've got them and make reference to them. Sandy, I am so thrilled with this. And as I said, Fae Willie Duncan, he is my hero and a very special friend. There's just nae end to Willie's generosity, and his knowledge of the land and the garden and the, is next to nane. He spent a lifetime on the land and his garden, and nobody cares mair about apples than Willie or anything. Dave, you ken Willie's wheel as well. We've broadcast with Willie for many years.
I've worked with Willie on and off for many years, and I'm off a kind of frustrated at the moment because I was going to go and see him, but it's no safe to do that. He wanted me to go in here, look at some ferns for him, but we'll get it done. But, you know, Willie's a living national treasure.
Right.
They didn't make gardeners like that anymore. And to have known someone like Willie in my life as a gardener is an immense privilege. He's just a grand, down-to-earth manny with a lot of knowledge.
He's one of my favourites. So it gives me great pleasure to play us out with one of the tracks for your CD, Sandy. This is a selection of tunes, and so you can tap your partners. And with Sandy's music, our special thanks to Willie Duncan, for your virtual sheds, for the gang here. My thanks this episode going to our guest gardener, Hugh Taylor. It's been a pleasure hearing you, Hugh. Absolutely. Come back and join us again, please.
Oh, I'd be delighted to, Frieda.
I hope you've enjoyed yourself and you're not too hungry.
Now, I'm starving.
No, that is food mention. And thanks again to Dave Mitchell, Richie Werner, right. Andrew Davidson, Claire Patterson, and myself, Frieda Morrison. Thanks for joining us. Come back again. Enjoy your garden.